What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And a good Thursday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day as we inch a little bit closer to the end of the week. Darren McFarland, that's me, down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick continues to be over in East Nashville, where he's been the last 2.5 months, and Chase McCabe out on the west side in Bellevue, and Marquise Munson at the wheel at the Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Gentlemen, how are we doing?
Doing well.
Yeah?
Doing well.
Doing fantastic.
Fantastic.
Feeling good today.
All right. Yeah, me too. It's good. Yeah.
It's Thursday. Good.
No rain, it doesn't look like, at least not right now.
I think there could be some later.
Yeah. It's a little overcast, but better than yesterday. We got a lot of rain yesterday. It's kind of a yucky day.
Which just always makes me feel just, I can't get my energy going. You know, whenever it's just raining all day, it makes me tired.
Yeah. Well, it was apparently raining in Charlotte, too, because the cup race did not happen. It's been pushed to tonight, and I believe that starts at, what, 6 Central tonight?
Yep. 6 o'clock Central time. What's funny is I had just tweeted out my my predictions. I always do three Vegas with the Vegas odds and give three drivers that I think could win. And I just sent those out, and the NASCAR sends the email and makes the announcement that they're moving it to tomorrow. So,
yeah. What is their weekend schedule? Where are they supposed to be this weekend?
They're in our state. They're at the Bristol Motor Speedway.
Okay.
Yeah. They were supposed to do the Xfinity race Saturday, you know, like they usually would. But since they moved the Cup race in Charlotte to today, they have now moved the Xfinity race to Monday night under the lights to give them more time to travel from Charlotte and set up and everything. So, because, you know, they got to go a little further than they have been going to Darlington and Charlotte. So giving them a little more time to execute all that, they just decided to move the Xfinity race to Monday night.
There you go. I was actually going to check it out last night. That's how I knew. I was like, you know what? It's Wednesday night. Let's do it. This is where NASCAR should be able to capitalize in these times.
Oh, yeah.
Wednesday night, let's check it out. Quite honestly, I think they need to do more racing during the week, especially during
these times. That's coming.
Right?
I think they would
period.
Silly not to.
Actually,
yeah.
Period. I think they would benefit from racing during the week. I really
yeah.
do.
No,
I think it would help them a lot.
It would, and they've talked about it. It's been one of those things that I think deep down they know that it's a good idea and they need to do it and that everybody wants to do it, but they've just been scared to take that leap. Now, it was discussed that when they, with the 2021 schedule, that they would build some in and they would actually start doing it, but it was still like, do we want to? And they got forced into it, and now they realize, oh, this is a great idea. I mean, I was listening to an interview with Chase Elliott, and he said that, you know, the racing has been good with these one day, you know, show up, don't practice. And he goes, for us, honestly, we'd love to spend less time practicing and more time racing and, you know, doing the midweek races, especially when it's close by, you know, find those places that it's going to be easy to get to and then go to the next stop, because we love that, because it's just, it makes sense for us. And, you know, we're going to get new eyeballs on the sport. And so I think everybody's on board. I would imagine whenever they come out with the new schedule, you will see midweek races actually built in.
Yep. Willie, your gut feeling on Major League Baseball returning anytime soon?
I'm going to withhold any real worry until the end of the week.
Really?
I would expect. Okay. Oh, yeah. You knew it was going to get ugly. You knew it. There was no way it wasn't going to really get into the ring and have a knockdown drag out. So I expected this. I still think they can get there. You know, they might have to work till midnight Saturday night, midnight Sunday night. I don't know, but I'm hoping they, you know, they're throwing their biggest punches now, and then they meet in the middle because they're pretty far apart right now, no question. I was very intrigued this morning. I was reading Ken Rosenthal. The players apparently are going to counter-propose a season that has more games that I guess extends further into the fall.
Just silly.
It says that, you know, basically you pay us the half of the salary and we'll play more games.
Yeah, it's just silly. I do believe that it's going to affect them when they come back, whenever they get this. Like, I just don't think people are going to show up to the parks. I think people are going to stay away.
Well, they can.
I think you're right.
I think people are going to protest. I don't think they're going to go.
I see what you're doing. Okay. But I do think it's going to hurt them, especially if this drags out. And it may be something they don't recover from for a long time, if ever.
They can't let it drag out. I mean, it just can't happen.
But right now, it feels like both sides are willing to do that.
100 games.
Well,
who
right
they
now
kidding?
They don't have to make a decision. Right now, they're gonna go back and forth. You knew this was coming. There's no way they were gonna just wake up and say, you know what, I'll take your offer. There's gonna be some jostling back and forth, some fighting. The key is what happens at the end of the week when they have to make this decision.
Monday is June 1st. It's like, folks, you're gonna 100 games is laughable to me. 100 games. We're in June on Monday, and they're not even close.
You
think you're going
to play
100 games?
You would have to extend into the fall.
Right, and you're going to have the World Series, what, Thanksgiving weekend? That'll go over well, especially if it's a Northeast team. That'll be good. Or maybe we can get Colorado back in there again.
No. Part of the proposal is you would play the postseason in a neutral site in warm weather. They're not crazy enough to do that, to play Thanksgiving weekend.
I did not catch that. But what if that's logical?
No. You would play in a neutral site for the
you
postseason.
You mean back to the Arizona, Florida deal?
Yeah,
or somewhere
they would just play
close.
Well, something like that. They didn't specify where, but it would be in a quote warm weather climate.
But still, once you get into October and November in any of these places, even when you're trying to play 100 games, I mean you're going to have sketchy weather. Right? What do you do about rain?
Well, you could play indoors.
Well, what is their plan? Are they planning on playing at their home stadiums? What is the plan?
No, neutral site for the postseason.
No, I'm talking about the regular season.
Yeah, playing it. The last I saw was they played at their stadiums.
Right. If you're going to squeeze in 100 games, what about all the rainouts that they're going to, you know, endure? So you're going to try to sandwich in 100 games?
No, you're playing doubleheaders.
In the elements?
I mean, you're definitely scheduling doubleheaders. You have to if you're going to get 100 games in. There's no question. But I'm with you, Darren. I like the 82 game proposal. I'm fine with that. You know, it makes so much sense. The thing that I said this earlier, I don't make millions of dollars. Like, I'm not in their shoes. So, you know, there are things that I won't even pretend to know about, but at the end of the day, the optics of this are just awful. And you need to just sit down and go, listen, this is a very unique situation. It's unprecedented. As the players, we are not agreeing to a salary cap. We want that in writing, that you understand that this is just for now. We're not open to that negotiation, but if this is the best course of action for us to get going, then, you know, we'll do this. But because the players are the one, and baseball has done it this way for a reason, the players are the ones that are looking bad right now because they're not willing to take the 50-50 split. Because, you know, like Tom Glavine explained a couple of weeks ago, I mean, it that's a salary cap. That's essentially what you're doing. So this is just why it's gotten out of control and is a very bad look on baseball and the players, even though the players are the ones that are going to be perceived as the bad guys.
Well,
right
how
now.
Do they not how do they not understand that, though? Everybody
they
around the country, what is the unemployment rate? Okay, let's add on top of the unemployment rate in this country, on top of people who have taken salary reductions or furloughs during this time. What do you think the percentage of Americans are? Salary cuts.
It's between 20
furloughs,
and 25%.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
at least salaries.
One out of four
furloughs
people.
Or unemployment. What do you think the percentages are of Americans in this country?
I'll say 25.
It's one out of four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You think one out of four is going to side with the players?
Heck no.
Of course not. How do the players not understand that? America isn't going to side with them.
They're all dealing with it.
They have to deal with it in their own lives, and they're going to sit there and feel sorry for the players.
They're living in their own little bubble.
Of course they are. It usually always happens that way.
But let me just give a different perspective. I'm not saying I completely disagree with that at all, but why? You know, I think a lot of people can sympathize that, you know, the owners, you would think, are doing well enough that they can also soldier through and keep their employees, you know, with the best deal possible. The owners are not trusted by the players. That's what Max Scherzer's main point was, is, hey, show us the financial ruin. You know, then we'll be more apt to come around and say, okay, this is the deal. We understand. Let's have a partnership here. We don't want to just take your word for it that this is what you have to pay us. And so I would also say that nobody is going to worry about the optics if they get the deal done this week. Nobody's going to remember. Nobody even cares really what they end up getting, right? At the end of the day, they're getting paid a lot more than most of us are getting paid, right? Even a worst case scenario for the players. So if they get it done and they play on time, then I think everything will be fine, even if they have a knockdown drag out publicly for a few days. The real problem for baseball is if they have everything a go on the field, with all the health hurdles that you have to cross, and they're not on the field because of this, that's what's going to be devastating for the game. I mean, devastating.
Wayne tweets, I firmly believe DMAC will give up milkshakes before baseball returns. That is not happening. No chance. Then you're saying, Wayne, baseball's never returning. I'm not giving up milkshakes. No.
Did you see the poll question that Ryan put up?
No.
He says at Porth Game, important Twitter poll, what happens first? MLB returns or Chase gets a girlfriend. 54% say that I will have a girlfriend before baseball returns.
Wow. Well, they got faith in you. That's good. Or they don't have faith in baseball. Close vote. I don't know what their thinking is.
See, I think they don't have faith in baseball.
What their mindset is, but that's interesting.
Robbie Stanley's gif is hilarious. I have faith in Charles, and it's a Charles Barkley gif. So
nice. We will come back. John Solomon, who used to be with CBS Sports, he was a college football reporter. He is now with Aspen Sports, and we're going to talk to John Solomon about a big article that he wrote, something that we've talked about on the show this week involving youth sports tournaments. So we'll get into that during a pandemic. We will talk with John on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this Thursday, a guy we've enjoyed talking with over the years, John Solomon, used to be with CBS Sports, covered college football as a reporter for them. Now he is with Aspen Sports. The Aspen Institute is the website, and John Solomon is indeed on the line with us at John Solomon Aspen on Twitter. Recently wrote an article about USSSA and U Sports and the fight to try to come back during this pandemic. John, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, give us a little insight into this article. Obviously, the two of us on this show, our parents, our dads, have sons. They play baseball and have been involved in the travel world, understand U-Trip is what they call it, USSSA. U-Trip is a big outfit around the country. It's a big outfit here in the state of Tennessee. But kind of just give us kind of the backdrop behind this, where you talk about how much revenue they bring in annually, how much their CEO, and how they're trying to work around, COVID-19.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, I mean, travel sports for kids is a big industry. It's a very commercialized industry. Youth sports as a whole is estimated to be a $19 billion industry, and that's really just looking at the travel sports and some of the software platforms. So this time off for some of these travel sport organizers like USSSA has really been taken a financial hit. You know, they told the Florida Today newspaper they lost about $4.5 million just by canceling these events. So there is a huge financial incentive for these events to come back on immediately, as soon as possible. And So what we did was we took a look at, they put out these return to play guidelines on May 1st and had a couple experts look at it, and also looking through our lens as well at Project Play, where we really try to reimagine youth sports through the core values of health and inclusion, and tried to understand, okay, what are these guidelines saying and how will they be applied? Because there are going to be many, many people across the country using them. And, you know, we raised a lot of questions, including talking to a public health expert at Johns Hopkins University Medicine, just about the lack of specificity on some things, things that were contradicting in one, were said in one sport and weren't applied in another sport. We tried to get the USSSA to, you know, comment and be able to explain some more, and then unfortunately they didn't respond to any requests. But it's big business for organizations like them. You know, I looked at their tax return, and their CEO in 2017 made about $1 million. They bring in about $22 to $25 million each year in annual revenue. So they want to get back up and playing as soon as possible. And public health experts really say that travel sports, when it comes to youth sports, should be the last phase to return. Really, you should be going more with individualized practices first. You know, then when conditions on the ground are right and public health experts say it's right, then you go to your like localized games. But with travel sports, you're mixing people from all across the country, and it's really the same concerns that pro sports and college sports are trying to work through. And there are people in youth sports who are just saying that's okay. We're gonna go ahead with it.
Yeah, ironically, there is a 132-team tournament that is set to take place this weekend, and from everything I'm being told, it is going to happen. And to our knowledge, it is the first tournament that is going to take place in the state of Tennessee, and it is indeed put on by USSSA, and it's ages 7 to 14. Like I said, it's a 132-team tournament, and I've had some parents of mine send some of the guidelines they have put out there. They've already doled out times and fields, so I think it's going to go on. I do think it's going to happen. And like I said, I think this will be a first in our state. And, John, I was just kind of looking over this stuff, and because I'm fully aware how these tournaments work, I'm the head coach. We're in kid pitch. I'm the pitcher. Willie has gone through this with his son. But talking about coaches bringing game balls and Clorox wipes to wipe the baseball down every half inning. Umpires are not allowed to touch baseballs. Players and assistant coaches must retrieve all foul balls, not spectators. It goes on to talk about they encourage people who are watching to wear masks, not to sit on the bleachers, bring your own chair. Look, all these, I could go on and on. All these things are great, John, but I'd like to know in a 132-team tournament, this is a big, this can be put on over four locations. Who in the world's going to go around and actually, you know, enforce these rules? I mean, to me, it's kind of a give me a break. Who's kidding who? We know darn well that isn't going on. That's nice to put that out there, but who enforces any of that? And what's the penalty if you're not listening?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think a lot of people just don't care, right? And not that they don't care about health. They just feel like it's safe and it's fine, and they believe the benefits outweigh whatever small risk in their mind that there is. And there's still a lot more that we still don't know about the virus. I mean, look, I want kids to be back out playing as soon as possible. I have an 11-year-old son who missed his spring baseball season. I've been a coach in soccer and basketball and baseball. And, I mean, candidly, right now as a volunteer coach, I wouldn't feel comfortable right now yet coaching and being in charge of, you know, 10 to 15 to 20 kids, not knowing all the what I need to know about COVID-19 right now and the training and the guidelines. Just keep in mind, like, these are still kids, right, that they're going to be going out there and they're going to touch things in the course of a game and, you know, interact with an umpire or with a referee in the course of a game or interact with each other and not doing the social distancing that may be needed because that's what kids do. And we all have to sort of begin to educate ourselves in a new way in order to live with this virus, but that means we actually have to educate ourselves, right? And starting in phased approaches such as smaller practices and, you know, even in school settings. I always have thought, okay, when schools reopen, that's when we'll start seeing youth sports really reopen. But then in the past couple months, it became pretty clear, no, youth sports is going to come back before schools. But schools are at least that environment where you have trained educators, and it's a way to sort of begin to practice what these new habits need to look like. That's more conducive to learn it than in a youth sports setting with, you know, well-intentioned volunteer coaches who just don't necessarily know what they're doing.
I'll tell you what, if they're wiping down the balls after every half inning for four or five games this weekend, let's see, 132 teams, and they've all got the supplies for Clorox wipes to do that, I would just like to know, John, where did they get all those Clorox wipes?
And also, you're going to have some
illegal
pitches.
Where in the world do you find that many Clorox wipes?
If you're pitching, I think you're going to have some serious movement on some of your pitches, like a spitball.
I mean, you got to be kidding me. Like, that's the one thing on shelves everywhere. There's no wipes. Clorox wipes, where? Where do you get that?
Yeah. I know. You know, the other thing to think about as well is the officials and the umpires who are part of this, right? These are adults, and I wrote a story about this as well that, you know, sports officials in our country tend to be older. They're more likely to be 60 or older than 30 and under. It's already a very tough profession to find officials. How many of these people are going to want to come back? And are we communicating with them about what they're comfortable with in terms of, like, umpiring? So, for instance, we're starting to see some of these guidelines of home plate umpires moving behind the pitcher, right, and calling balls and strikes that way. And that makes some sense, right, because you're not right behind the catcher. Then I talked to a leader on a national sports officiating organization who said, look, there's a lot of umpires who are not going to be comfortable doing that. A, they just won't like calling balls and strikes that way. And B, now you're right in the line of getting hit, you know, by a line drive. And do you have the reflexes to get out of the way? So there's so many elements that you have to think about as you return to play.
John Solomon is with us. AspenProjectPlay.org. You can read some of the material that we're talking about today. It's a lot of good material. If you are a coach or a parent of somebody and your team is starting to talk about returning to play, maybe your team is already doing some practicing or thinking about games, maybe signed up for some tournaments here and you're wondering if they're on or not, some things to think about. John, here's one thing that I've thought about a lot, and I think you're getting at this a lot with your writings and what you've said. It's one thing for the guy at the top who's making $1 million to cancel the tournament. But there's some teams that, let's say you've paid $500 to a tournament. Well, your organization, your team has paid that money. You have to think about, okay, if we don't go, do I ask for my money back? Can I get it? And then what if the parents ask for their money back? Can I make sure I get it? Like, what if I got to pay out of my pocket? You can see how maybe some of these people are hesitating before they cancel the tournament just because of the financial strain that they're all under, some uncomfortable conversations that would have to be had.
No doubt. I mean, look, refunds, I mean, my reporting and just talking anecdotally with people, they don't have exact data on this, but it seems like a lot of organizations are trying to hold off on the refunds, you know, to parents, you know, and to families. And it's more so, okay, if we do cancel a tournament or an event, we'll give you a credit, you know, in the future. Or please hold on and we're going to try to return or make it as a donation. Because there is a lot of financial challenges. There's no doubt. I mean, there will be youth sports providers that go under, you know, because of this. They're just not going to be able to survive. And part of it, what we want to do at Project Play, and we've been, you know, talking about this for several years, and this is a great opportunity to do it now, is reimagining the youth sports model and making it more sustainable and creating cheaper but still quality alternatives for all kids to play, so we're not just so reliant on a travel sports industry that, look, there are many benefits to it. I know there are many kids and families who enjoy it, and the competition and the interaction and the social aspect of it, but there are a lot of kids who get left behind by it as well, and now we're also seeing the pressures of this industry in terms of rushing back perhaps too soon.
John, I've read a lot on your website about that, and I agree a lot. And maybe down the road, we need to have you on again to talk about the model that you guys have, the vision, to try to find the happy median between the travel madness that I like to call it sometimes, and more the model that we grew up with. You know, if you're 45 and over, you know, where you play in your neighborhood, right? You have that community league that brings a lot of people together and doesn't leave the kids behind earlier. Maybe more people play for longer. There's a lot of great effects to that. It's great stuff. But in the moment here, I would love to hear your thoughts on, you know, especially because of your experience as a dad, as a coach, how do you try to have some of these conversations? There's some tough decisions, I'm sure, that a lot of teams have to make where, you know, maybe two or three parents are saying, well, I may not be comfortable traveling to this tournament, and maybe some of the other people on the team do want to go. And so there may be some peer pressure. Hey, if you don't go, we can't go. So what do we do? Like those have to be some pretty difficult conversations at times, and you have to be comfortable to be able to have those.
Yeah. Now, look, I mean, I think what's probably happening is that if there's enough kids who are able to play, then the teams are going to play, and those who don't feel comfortable don't. And I think for each parent, it's got to be an individual decision. And if you're a parent and you don't feel comfortable right now, then you're the parent. I mean, you know best. I mean, I would – parents know a lot more about, like, what right and wrong kind of looks like in youth sports, I think, than they give themselves credit for. It's just sometimes you get caught up in, you know, the peer pressure or wanting your child to not, you know, fall behind and, you know, and still be able to do the same thing as other kids. But volunteer coaches are, you know, they're well-intentioned. I'm a volunteer coach, but we're still just volunteer coaches, and we don't know everything. And I would say parents to, you know, make their own individual decision about what they're comfortable with.
Based on everybody you've talked to, because you've talked to a lot of experts, do you think there's a pretty distinct difference at this point between gathering, having a practice where, you know, you're with your guys, or maybe even playing another local team, as opposed to traveling, staying in hotels, being around 50 or 60 teams at a complex, et cetera? There seems to me to be a pretty distinct difference between those two.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, so first and foremost, I think returning to play is going to look differently depending on the community that you're in, right? What are the local conditions on your ground? And have you gotten sign-off from a public health expert? That's really important too, right? That you're not just doing this on the fly and maybe just say, well, the governor has opened these things up, and so now we can play. Well, make sure you're really getting a public health expert to sign off on this, you know, in some way. But I totally agree. It's just the law of numbers, right, and averages, that if you're interacting with more people and from different parts of the country, then, of course, you're potentially increasing the risk of COVID spread, you know, in your community or within your team or parents.
We're talking to John Solomon, and one thing that is we have this conversation that kind of stands out to me that I guess concerned about, you know, if you're a parent and you decide that you don't feel like it's safe for your kid to play, or, you know, if the kid expresses that they don't feel safe and they don't play, so they don't, you know, what kind of effects does that have with their standing with the team of, you know, when they do come back, that you've obviously had to play somebody in their place? I think it's unfair to punish somebody just because they decide not to play because they don't think the conditions are safe. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, you would hope that doesn't happen, but I wouldn't be surprised in some places if it does, you know, particularly more competitive, you know, club teams or organizations. Yeah, I mean, if you're not comfortable because of a pandemic and a coach is going to then bench you or think you don't take it seriously enough moving forward, then, you know, maybe you're on the wrong team, you know, in the wrong organization. And maybe that's a pretty good telltale sign that you need to go look somewhere else to play and that people are more understanding. But hopefully that doesn't happen, but it wouldn't surprise me if it does in some instances.
I know we've been talking youth sports with you, but I am curious of your thoughts of just college football and how all of this is going to affect college football. It's obviously different than pro sports, but there's still a financial aspect to it, just like we've been talking about with youth sports. So what do you think ends up happening on the collegiate front when we get to the fall?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the answer anyone wants to hear, but I don't think anyone knows yet, right? Like, we'll see where this virus goes. I mean, clearly players are going to start returning, you know, and college athletes, you know, here in the next couple of weeks, June 1st, some dates, June 8th, some dates, like the SEC. I think it will depend on, you know, where we are with, you know, the virus, you know, in the spread. Are we having, you know, more cases and more deaths, or are we starting to, you know, continue to decline? You know, one thing that really stands out to me is the, at least on paper, what looks like a difference in terms of testing, you know, of college athletes versus pro athletes. So on the one hand, the NHL is talking about, hey, when we bring these players back, they're going to be tested daily. And that probably is the right approach or close to the right approach that you may need to test that often in order to continue to be playing these sports for multiple months, assuming we have enough testing for the rest of the country at that point. We don't want to take tests away from healthcare workers and people who are sick, people who really need it, and give it to NHL hockey players or college athletes. Whereas college sports is talking about, you know, testing maybe once when they come or every so often, but sounds like a lot less and not very regularly, and sometimes only if symptoms appear. It's going to be interesting is, will there be pressure from, like, college athletes that they put on themselves, or maybe they just feel within their team, of not even admitting symptoms in order to get tested because, you know, they want to keep playing or they don't want their team to be shut down and have to forfeit. There's going to be a lot of, you know, interesting dynamics and questions associated with it. But the pro sports angle is taking a much more aggressive approach to testing, it seems like, than college.
John, appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Continue to be safe, you and your family, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right, that is John Solomon with Aspen Sports. The website is the Aspen Institute. We'll continue to talk about what we just discussed with John on the other side of Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We got into this conversation in the final hour of Tuesday's show, and there was a tournament that took place in Memphis / Cordova over the weekend, over Memorial Day weekend, and it was put on by USSSA. U-Trip. When you hear me say U-Trip, that's the same group. But doing a little deeper dive with the people that I talk to in this world, sounds to me, the information that was given to me, is those fields were actually owned and operated by U-Trip. So it was a private complex. This was not city fields. Typically, these tournaments are held on city fields. So they do have to work in coordinates with the cities.
Not at City Field, but on City Field.
Not at City Field, yeah. No. And they may have tournaments at City Field. I don't know. But in this case, the towns, they have to basically pay them to rent their space, rent their complex, their fields. So they didn't really count, because that to me was the first tournament I had heard. And I've been plugged into all these tournaments that they were signing teams up all month. And then every about Wednesday, Thursday morning at the latest, it's been canceled, right? So they continued to have tournaments on the schedule throughout the month of May, all around the state. But to my knowledge, everything was getting canceled basically by Wednesday night. But this one took place, and I was like, whew, that's interesting. So that's the first one that I've heard of that actually took place. Well, it was on private fields. U-Trip actually owned that complex there in Cordova. Now, this weekend, fast forward, one of the locations is in Lawrenceburg. There's, I think, actually four locations. It's ages 7 through 14, and there are teams coming from all over. This state, Alabama, Kentucky, and Mississippi. And the tournament is sold out. They've got 132 teams. And the entry fees are anywhere from $450 to $550 per team. So do the math. That's a lot of coin for this tournament. And I've talked to some people that are a part of this and know what's going on. They have been divvied field times for Saturday and fields. So to me, knowing this world, that's green light go. I mean, they would have canceled it. They wouldn't be sitting here talking about this on Thursday. And something especially this big. It's one thing to cancel a 10-team tournament, and maybe you wait till a little bit later than normal, but not something this big. So I believe this tournament is absolutely going to happen this weekend. And to my knowledge, and it's the Lawrenceburg Parks and Recreation. And like
right.
I said,
so,
I think
so
there's four locations.
There's an article in the Tennessean about this. Mike Organ and Adam Sparks put it together. And so I don't know. Based on what's in the article, Darren, you probably have
Well,
more
I have more
information
than what's in this article. I'm telling
well,
you
I know.
What's going. Yeah. It's going to happen.
All right. Well,
to what you're referencing, the article is getting a lot of quotes from, you know, U-Trip. And they're like, you know, well, as far as we know, this is going to happen. But they're very noncommittal. I don't know when they talked to them, too. That may have been on, you know, Tuesday. maybe Mike Organ or Adam Sparks. I don't know when they actually talked to them to get the quotes.
Yeah. And yeah, so, that's true. But
I'm so telling you, as of Thursday, they've divvied out times and fields, and that tells me this thing's absolutely happening.
Okay. Because the non-committal part does seem to be a theme that I think a lot of people are experiencing because of the financial part, right? We just got done in our first segment talking about how tough this whole thing has been financially on a lot of people, and therefore, you've got coaches or a lot of organizations, travel organizations that rely heavily on this for their livelihood, right? So they're not. Let's say our team has paid. You've got a lot. You've paid the entry fee. Let's say that's $400 or $500 for a team, and if you were to decide not to play, right? There's a couple of ways you can go. As John Solomon said, maybe the tournament or the organization gives you a credit and says, you know, I'd really rather not give you your money back, but you're probably going to want to play in one of our tournaments down the road sometime, so we'll give you a credit for the next tournament. That's one way to go. But what if you don't get that? Then the coach has to say, well, can we get our money back? What if they won't give you your money back? And then what if the parents are crawling down that coach's neck to say, hey, what about our money back? You know, we didn't get to play.
I've never heard of that. Willie, I've never heard of an organization saying we had to cancel and we're keeping your money. I mean, I've never heard of that. Look, they have to work with these teams. They're not in the business of ticking off travel ball coaches and teams. I mean,
that's what I was about to say.
Never heard of an example of that. I'm not saying
offer a credit? What if they offer a credit, but you don't want the credit? You want your money back, or the parents decide you want your money
back.
In my dealings, they are very, very – they've been very flexible. In fact, the tournaments that we've signed up for, you even have the option of paying first thing that Saturday morning, walking up to their tent and paying them for your team. I mean, you have that ability. A lot of teams do that just to make sure, and so they can pay their on-site. You can sign up anytime. You could sign up for tournaments all day long and not pay. That's why when you see teams signed up, it doesn't necessarily mean they've paid. I can go in there and sign us up for tournaments all over wherever I want and not necessarily pay, and you'll be on the books. When you go look on their website, you'll see Tidal Wave Blue signed up. It doesn't mean we've paid. I'm just saying I find it hard to believe
that's
anybody's had an
too,
experience
then.
Like that.
Yeah, well, I think that's also an interesting point is you can have 70 teams signed up or whatever the number is, but if there's a lot of those teams on the fence and they might be in the bracket, they're signed up, and they just decide to pull out last minute, that's why I think that this organization is getting a lot of calls. Like the Parks and Rec Department was getting a lot of calls. Is the tournament still on? There might be a lot of teams in that position.
Especially when they're coming from other states, you know. You want to know.
Yeah. Well, I would say so. There's just so many elements to this that we hit on with John that I think are important. Like there's a quote from the Hendersonville coaches, right? The Hendersonville Rangers, if you're a travel ball aficionado at any, you've probably seen some of their teams. They have an excellent program that's been going on for years with a lot of local kids that they have from that community, which I admire, right? They don't have kids from all around the mid-state. It's basically Hendersonville. That's their kids. But they're talking about a 9-year-old team, right, just as an example. And the coach is doing everything he can to try to get the habits in the kids and stuff like that. The kids are excited to play. But it does bring up the question is when they're playing, can the 9-year-old kid or an 8-year-old kid or a 10-year-old kid, can they be diligent enough to follow these practices to truly mitigate the risk? You know, it's a fair question to put out there, as much as you might try to do that.
Darren, you have an 8-year-old. Willie, you have had a 9 or 10-year-old. I think you both probably know the answer to that question.
We've gone through the ranks.
Oh, I know the answer. I mean, I live it every day. I mean, I know the answer. I can tell you, and I see other, and I'm around
I think you have to
other
be,
kids in that age group.
You
I
have
know
to
the
be
answer.
Willing to admit that there's if you're going to play baseball, you're going to play baseball.
There's people going to swap dirt.
They're going to bounce off each other every now and then, and the ball is going to get contaminated. Somebody's going to lick their fingers. It's just going to happen, right? You cannot prevent it.
So the reality is, Willie,
I do admire that.
If 132 teams have signed up for this, they know what they've signed. You know what I mean? If people were uncomfortable, they wouldn't sign up. So they know what they're getting into, and what you're saying is absolutely true. I mean, that's why I understand. It's CYA. I get it. You've got to put out those rules. But it's, for me personally, it's kind of laughable because it's not getting enforced. I know how this works. Go around to any of these tournaments. Who's enforcing that stuff? It's like I said, it's CYA.
There's not going to be.
So you know what you're signing up for. In other words, you know what you're getting. You, either everybody's comfortable with it, and you're going to try to do the right thing, and you're comfortable with it, or if you're not, then you're not going. But 132 teams have clearly said they're comfortable with playing in this tournament this weekend.
Right. My biggest concern is not actually playing the games, and I think I've tried to make that clear anyway. It's the convergence of all the people is my biggest concern. Now, this tournament in Lawrenceburg is fairly unique in that, as it mentions in the article, and I think they wanted to make this point, that's one of the reasons I think they feel like they can make a go of this, is small town to begin with, probably hasn't had a lot of cases to this point, at least documented. I don't know how much testing they've done down there, but let's take that as a given. And they've spread it around to different spots, so maybe you don't have that atmosphere that we've all experienced, Darren. You've seen it when you go to a complex. Part of the fun of it, right? You got four diamonds within, 500 feet of each other. They're all converged in there. You got a concession stand in the middle. You peek over what's going on over this field. We play the winner of this game over there. That's part of the awesomeness of these tournaments, right? You get excited. How are we going to do against these teams? And we got this pitcher going up against this team. Can he get these guys out? We got a lot of really good stuff going on here. That's what a lot of these complexes look like. And so that's what I worry. I think it's nice to say, well, we'll have social distancing. You can't sit in the stands. But there's going to be – I don't know if we can avoid it, right? I don't know if we're ready for that just yet. And that's my concern. It's not as much playing. And then it's also the dugouts. How many teams have been in that same dugout? Where are all those teams from? You're just increasing the chances.
Can I play the other side? When you say you don't know
absolutely.
If we're ready for that yet. Okay. So is next – so a month later, are we ready? What changes? What changes 2 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now, 6 weeks from now? What's the timetable of when we're ready, and what does that mean, are we ready? Because nothing's going to change in what we're talking about, right? Nothing's going to change.
That is absolutely the question. But I think you might get a feel for the ones that are willing to jump out there, which I don't know if I'm in that group yet. You might have some data to go on, okay? There's been this amount of tournaments. We haven't seen any problems that have come out of these tournaments. The tournaments have been well run. They're doing everything they can, and we have not seen any evidence that there's been any outbreaks. That might give me a little bit more willingness to jump in there. But that's a great question, Darren. Is it going to be different July 1st as opposed to June 1st? I think that's what a lot of people are probably wrestling with. And I think there are plenty of people that are ready to give it a go and there are going to give it a go.
I think in a lot of cases, and it's not just, we just happen to be talking about youth sports right here, but isn't that kind of the case with a lot of people? I mean, everybody's in uncharted territory, right? Everybody's in places that they never thought, these businesses that have reopened and they're doing things completely different and masks and shields and markers down on the floor for ask you to stay in line at this marker and then move up to the marker 6 feet in front of you when that person steps up to the net. I mean, these are things that everybody had to make adjustments and didn't know how it was going to play out, right? So I think everybody has had to kind of dive into the deep end and see if they could swim in it, right? I mean, I don't know what's really going to change.
That's what I don't know.
I think you have to. Don't you think
here's another answer to that, though. Here is another part of the equation outside of actual what's happening in the tournament, what's happening with the baseball itself, and that is society in general. We've just opened up. We've just gone into phase two, for example, in Nashville on Monday. Can we get to phase three? Or are we going to have a setback? Do we have to stay in phase two longer than we thought? Like, in another month, we will have a clearer picture nationwide of the effects of opening up, which there are some health people saying, hey, I don't know. I mean, we're going there. We can't go back. Let's open up the economy. Let's give people a chance to make smart decisions out there. But there is a risk when you open up that you will have more cases, more people getting sick, et cetera. I mean, I hope it doesn't happen, right? But the health experts do say that the thing that is the most risky is to have a lot of people from a lot of different places converging in. We all saw the clip of the Ozarks, right, the pool party, where a lot of people came from a long ways away to that spot, and they all go back home. That is something that raises the risk, just like a travel tournament where you have a lot of teams from a lot of different areas converging in one to one area.
I don't know what we'll learn from this tournament. I'm not sure because what's going to change? All you can do is ask people to do stuff and hope that they do it. But I don't know what we're – maybe we do. And maybe this has got to be the lab rat, this tournament right here. This is that's a big tournament. And maybe we come out of this and we learn some things. Maybe UTRIP, which is a big, big organization. I mean, they've got tournaments everywhere. If you're, you know, in the travel ball or travel world of youth sports, you're familiar with, you know, UTSSA. And so they put on a lot of, as we talked about John Solomon, and they – $25 million was their annual revenue, and their CEO makes over $1 million. So that's a lot of tournaments. It's a lot of youth tournaments. But I don't know what we learn. Maybe we learn some things. That would be great because all these rules that I laid out that I've been privy to see that they've given to these teams and these coaches, they all sound great. That's fantastic. But I don't know what we learn. Like that to me just makes sense, right? I mean, I obviously you don't want people on top of each other. You know, it's pretty interesting. No sitting on the bleachers. Please bring your own chair. That is interesting because when you're talking about a gathering of this size, and not to have people on bleachers, boy, that's a lot of people spread out in their own chairs. And I don't know. Usually the setups I've been to. All right, can that even be done? Right. Yeah.
Bring some lawn chairs.
Right. I think that's so.
Bring some sunscreen.
Well, you should do that anyway.
Yeah.
You go spend a weekend.
But some of the bleachers, they have a canopy over the top of it. You know, you can actually sit in shade if you're in the bleachers. But the other level is the travel part of it, right? It's one thing if you're commuting from your homes to the tournament and back. It's another level if you're staying in a hotel too, right? I don't know a whole lot of people that have stayed in a hotel.
You're right.
Since this thing started, that's another area that we have to be comfortable with.
That's a good point.
I don't know how many people are comfortable with that yet.
I haven't even really thought about that. That's a good point.
Umpires are not allowed to touch baseballs. Players and assistant coaches must retrieve all foul balls, not spectators. That's great. That seems like a really good rule, right? How logical is it that that can really – how practical is it that that could actually happen with that many games, with that many teams going on every day, Saturday, all day from sun up to
sundown? You know what they need
to
sell, Darren? Sell at the park those things that you have with your dog. If your dog slobbers all over the tennis ball that you're throwing. My cousin has one. Her dog slobbers all over the place. He's awesome at running and get the ball. But he'll drop the ball for you, but you don't want to pick that thing up. It is just slime city. But they have this plastic thing that picks up the ball. It's like an extra little arm.
I know what
it looks like
about.
A little cesta. You know, they need to sell those at the parks. So just pick up the ball with that thing and sling it back.
Well, in
to the
all
players.
Seriousness,
you don't have to touch it.
Foul balls happen all the time. And guess what? People walking around grab the ball and throw it back on the field.
Of course they
right?
do.
So what are you supposed to, when somebody's getting ready to do that, is everybody screaming, no, 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 don't?
Well,
who does get it?
Like that. The right? game is going to get delayed because if a player has to go get the ball.
Right. Well, it says you're right, players or assistant coaches. Yeah, it sounds
and they want to stay
good
on time.
On paper,
like it sounds great,
right.
but there's just
no
it's just,
way.
It's just not practical.
It is. It's not practical. That's the best way I can put it. It's just not practical. They are very
but you try,
strict
right?
on
I admire that you want to try, right? You want to try even if it's somewhat decreases the risk, that's better than the alternative, right? We're going to try to mitigate the circumstances as much as we can. Well, here's one comment about umpires. So John Solomon made this. I think it's an important point. And I can tell you my experience. I think he's dead on right. The umpire is much likely to be an older person than a younger yep. person. Mm-hmm. And not always the most mobile. You know, big range of body types and range of health. And, you know, that's a concern for me. You know, I've always thought, man, these guys are unbelievable how they do five straight games in the heat with their equipment on and stuff behind home plate. I mean, I admire the heck out of the effort they put in there. We can't have the games without them. As much as sometimes we get frustrated with the call here and there, right? We don't even want to go there. We know that happens. But they not only do they handle all the verbal craziness of the crazy parents, but, you know, they sit through the heat. There's health concerns for the umpire, right?
Well, I really had
especially
not
an
thought,
older umpire.
I wouldn't say that I've experienced a lot of everything. I've experienced older gentlemen. I've experienced young umpires. I've experienced middle-aged umpires. So I've kind of seen it all in this tournament. I don't really necessarily think when I think travel ball circuit or tournaments, I think older umpires. I've seen Kit, like, in fact, I've run into one in particular that does a lot of our games, and I see him at Preds games. I mean, he's probably 22 years old, early 20s.
Oh, maybe yeah, late, it's a wide
maybe
range.
Maybe 19,
it's a wide
20,
range.
21. Absolutely. He's somewhere in the 19 to 22 range.
Well, so, here's one. Should the home plate umpire call balls and strikes from behind the pitcher? When I was growing up, there was plenty of games that's how we did it. There was one umpire for the whole game. And he called balls and strikes from behind the pitching mound and called all the bases calls by himself. He would just run over to wherever the play was. We only had one ump. But if you want to do social distancing, that's the only way you could do it for an umpire. Otherwise, the umpire is breathing right down the neck of the catcher the whole game.
Roman says wrap it up.
It's
time to move
Roman.
On to hour number two. David Poyle, Predators general manager, will join us next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, guys. Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.